Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the Armchair Cinephiles. We are proudly sponsored by Figuratively Speaking Minis, who is aging again this year. May not look like she is, but she is in fact aging in the near future, which is why we're on a slightly different time than normal if you actually religiously follow this show. And I know that there is no one that does that, so it's fine for me to say that. Not yet. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Bodies, the Netflix series, not the Bodies series, which is a totally different show and doesn't involve time travel. Episodes 5 and 6 of season 1. I believe there will be a season 2. I think I have found most of the holes. I have watched the complete series. I have most of the holes figured out. Jeff will be able to laugh at me. Jeffrey, how about you give us a recap of episodes 5 and 6?
Okay, we'll try and blitz through this here. There's a lot of jumping around in 5, and then 6 and 7 and 8 are a little bit more linear, which is kind of cool. But so episode 5, we open in 1941. Whiteman is at church bleeding after he's been stabbed in the subway. He has a conversation with a rabbi about finding mercy in the eyes of Esther. Next, we jump to 2023. Hassan is found by Barber in the Harker residence because she was locked in the basement, if you recall.
Yeah.
As she gets out, she goes to look for the 3 bodies that were in there, but everything has been moved. She has a conversation with Barber back at the police station, and she is then seen having a phone conversation about the 1890 fingerprints, which match Elias's prints. Jump to 2053, Maplewood is handcuffed in a van with Gabriel Defoe and her neighbor after having just been tased by their neighbor. They arrive at a secret location where we see old Hassan, the reveal. Back in 2023, Hassan has a conversation with Elias in prison about Sir Julian Harker and shows him the matching fingerprints. Jump to 1890, where Hillinghead is showing his captain the fingerprints of Julian Harker, both at the scene of the crime and off of his glasses, and then is told to bring him in for questioning. We jump to 2023. Hassan continues to question Elias about his family, including his mother, who is potentially still alive. Hassan goes looking for Sarah Mannix. In 1941, Whiteman seeks the help of his captain Calloway and admits to killing Cousins, claiming it's the first man he's killed. He explains how Esther died, explains he's looking for justice for Esther, and wants to find the other rat who is in the police station who's helping Polly. We go to 2023, Hassan finds Elias's mother Sarah, explains Elias is in prison for murder, and Sarah gives Hassan some background information on Elias's childhood. We go to 2053, where Maplewood is being interrogated by Hassan and Defoe. They bring her to see the throat and explain the appearance and investigations of the other bodies and investigators. They also explain Mannix's plan to go back to 1890 and start the chain of events that sets off the bomb and eventually creates his utopia. In 1890, we see Julian Harker. So this is a separation that I made just for my brain. Julian Harker is the name that I use for when we're talking about Mannix in 1890.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's Elias in 2023.
Yeah.
And Mannix in 2053.
Which is great. I think that's what the show does as well.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Which makes sense in character and the different time periods, but for conversations purposes. So in 1890, Julian Harker is brought in to be questioned by Hillinghead. He admits to being at the scene of the crime and sends the police chief Paxman to go get tea. A bit of a show of power there. In 2053, Hassan explains to Maplewood about the records that Mannix made and takes her to the throat. We jump back to 1941. Police Chief Calloway convinces the department that Cousins' case is reopened due to new evidence, which allows Whiteman to eavesdrop in on any calls coming in or out of the police station in order to find out who's giving Polly information. Turns out it's Kathleen, the assistant. Kathleen is then arrested and reveals that the phone number, it goes to the Harker and Company Bank. Calloway and Whiteman arrive at the bank and find Polly. Whiteman takes her away at gunpoint. We go to 2023, where Sarah tells Hassan the story of getting pregnant with Elias from Danny, the so-called great-grandson of some posh dead banker. Turns out to be Police Chief Barber. Barber has taken Elias. 2053, Maplewood is taken to the throat. She experiences temporal displacement as she gets close, Gabriel explains how Mannix intends to use the throat to go back to 1890. Maplewood questions what happens to everyone in their present if they succeed in stopping the bomb, which is a great question. Mannix shows up as Maplewood has led him and his men there. Everybody goes to see the throat. We go back to 1890, where Julian explains everything to Hillinghead and tells him to frame Ash for the murder at Long Harvest Lane, and then that will allow Hillinghead's family to have a future. Otherwise, he will be exposed as a homosexual and accused of the murder himself. In 1941, Whiteman has Polly held in church. He interrogates her about Esther and the body. Calloway shows up and arrests Whiteman for the murder of Cousins and Polly for the murder of Esther. But then Chief Inspector Hayden Harker shows up and kills Calloway and has Polly released. In 2023, his son goes to Barbara's home and finds a record and a key. She plays the record, which is obviously Elias or
Mannix.
It's Julian Harker in 1941.
Yeah.
And he says, we'll meet again. And that's the end of the episode. Then we go into episode 6.
But that was a great, like, in terms of time travel episodes, that was a great, they did a great job of making it coherent, even though they are all over the place. That's totally. Okay. And totally. I'm not going to leap into anything. I'll let you do a recap on 6.
Okay. 1941, Julian is seen recording this same message that we ended episode 5 in. Recording the message she was on, explaining that the blast and how it will lead to his utopia. We hear him recording this as we fade to Hassan in 2023, playing the message to counterterrorism and outlining her theory on Elias and Julian Harker and Barbara. Hassan and one of the agents from counterterrorism head to the bank and find out that the key Hassan found opens one of the oldest vaults and that it's been registered to her name, Hassan's name, since 1941. They head to the vault in the basement, open it, and find the bomb. A phone rings in the vault. It's Barbara. He tells Hassan to head west of the city. Hassan and the agent head out in a car. Barbara calls again and reinforces that if Hassan doesn't come alone, he will blow the bomb. He also reiterates that Hassan is going to help Elias make the decision to trigger the bomb. We see Barbara on a boat with Elias. They have a conversation. Barbara arms the trigger and gives it to Elias along with a small paper. Hassan arrives at the boat. Barbara plays the last record Harker recorded. The counter-terrorist agent shoots Barbara. He dies. Elias gives the trigger to Hassan. We go to 2053. At the throat, Mannix admits to Maplewood that he detonated the bomb. There's a struggle. Mannix gets shot in the leg. Then he shoots Hassan. Defoe opens the throat to 1890. Mannix walks through. We go to 1890, where Hillinghead shows up at Ash's place and explains that he must frame him for the murder. Then we go back to 1941. Hayden has Whiteman in cuffs at the station. There's a struggle. Whiteman stabs Hayden in the neck. He leaves his badge on the desk as he heads to the Harker house. 1890, Hillinghead hands in his confession of the murder. He heads home where he admits his relationship with Ash to his wife and with Polly listening in the background. The police show up as he admits to the murder on Long Harvest Lane and is arrested. In 1941, Whiteman shows up to the Harker house. Polly is playing the piano. Whiteman shoots her, heads upstairs to find Julian in bed, and shoots him. Whiteman waits for the police to show up and gets arrested. We go to 2053, where Defoe shoots a guard. Maplewood shoots him in the eye as he enters the throat. We see flashes of his body, the body, showing up in all time periods. Then we go back to 2023, where Hassan and Elias are heading back to prison, but stop off at Sarah Mannix's house. Sarah declines seeing him. Elias opens up the paper that Barbara had given him, sees it's a phone number. He then steals a kid's phone and runs away. Hassan chases him. There's flashes of Maplewood, Whiteman, and Hillinghead as Elias calls the number and the bomb goes off. Then we jump to 1890 and we see Mannix wake up in the street in 1890 with a throat mark on his arm. And that is the end of episode 6. Two great episodes.
Yes.
I mean, this show is, it's great. I love it.
Okay. So episode 5.
Yes.
Where do you want to start with it?
So the paradox that is Mannix. He creates his own existence. He is a loop.
Okay. So I have a lot of questions about each of these episodes and time travel.
There's so many.
So how many times did he have to do this to get the loop to work right?
Well, for starters, it's...
And is there any time after 2053?
Not for Mannix. And this is where, like... You really get into sleep.
I don't think there is any time.
But then
I think it's a full loop and they're stuck in it. The Next Generation in Star Trek did one of these loops, I believe. And I'll try and get some graphs to, you know, pictures and circles and things. But I think that time is now, one of the explanations for what is going on is time is now stuck in what I'm going to refer to as the Mannix loop.
Okay.
And because of this, and it doesn't go any farther. Like I'm going to come back to that and contradict myself because it's a time travel discussion in episode six, because episode six is where we get to see the three of them split. Oh no, seven and eight. It'll be seven and eight. So I believe that time is now stuck in a Mannix loop. And as long as the events occur, time doesn't go forward. There is no forward. There is no forward.
Up until what point? Like as soon as Mannix goes back?
We haven't seen anything beyond that.
Correct.
In the other episodes, right, we see what happens after the bomb because we have 2053.
Yes.
We see what happens after 1891 because we get 1941.
Yes.
We see what happens after 1941. They're still in the war, right? So obviously this didn't have, you know, long-term effects on the historic timelines because we still have Nazis taking, you know, the Nazi war going on, right? We have 2023 and we know it goes on because we see Hassan age.
Right.
But we don't see anything past that.
Right. So this brings up the whole question about
so time. It's a closed loop. If Mannix is in a closed loop. Okay. Okay. Right. Second thing, why is it called the throat?
Yeah. That's never explained.
No, it's not.
So what's your theory?
Well, I want to discuss that after we talk about seven and eight.
Okay. Okay. So this theory of yours that time doesn't exist past 2053.
Based like in these two episodes, from what it shows us, time doesn't exist past 2023.
Right. That's where like, yeah.
Now, what do you think?
Well, so from the perspective, and this is the word of the day is perspective, because I've recently delved into the whole idea that time is not a constant.
It's not. It never has been.
Right. So you have to talk about time with the phrase with respect to, right?
No, you don't have to.
So, well, because if I'm traveling really fast away from the Earth,
yeah,
then
time dilation.
It's time dilation, right?
Yeah.
Like,
can you straighten your mic? For some reason, you're off axis now, and all we're getting is your deep throaty bedroom voice.
The best voice.
There we go.
That's better.
Little too close. Little too close, because now it's just clipping the mic a bit. Just put it a little ways away. You had it perfect at the start. Okay.
Okay.
There. That's good.
Perfect. So with time dilation in mind, right, it's from the perspective of the person on the spaceship flying really fast away from the Earth, time is moving at a normal speed. But from the perspective of the person on Earth, that time is different.
As long as we're speaking about an Einsteinian universe.
Right.
Okay.
So with these episodes and with Mannix, with respect to Mannix, he's in a loop forever.
Not just everybody is.
Just Mannix.
No.
He's in the loop forever because there was people before him.
I know, but he has to perform these tasks for the loop to remain. He has to make the recording so that the things happen, right? Hassan has to do her part.
Yes, which was, I loved that whole aspect of it. Because remember at the beginning, we're like, how do you get from Hassan's character to her helping Elias make the decision to blow the bomb? But it's all in the phrasing, right? Like, she totally does help him make the decision by bringing him to Sarah's place and then Sarah not meeting him and not speaking with him at all, which puts him over the edge in terms of like agony, and that allows him to set the bomb off. So all this talk from Barber and Mannix talking about how Hassan's going to play such a big role is like her want, her need, her desire to make Elias feel loved and treat him respectably and as a person and give him everything he needs eventually is the trigger, for lack of a better word, that sets the bomb off.
Is she predestined to do these actions?
Well, that's why the whole conversation with Defoe and Maplewood in the previous episode was so great, where he's talking about there is no free will. Like, it all ties together in this like little microcosm of a show. So, like, they did such a good job with the writing.
Defoe says there's no, yeah. And in a closed loop, where there is no free will.
Right.
In a closed loop, right? So we get back to this, what I think is a concept that I'm beginning to like more whenever I write my magnum opus on time travel, is that we have these ley lines and intersections and nexuses in time that occur. And in this particular example, Mannix in the future with the throat is the way that we see, you know, that we see this happen. What we have yet to see is how Defoe is able to create it. We know some little bits about it.
Create what?
The throat.
Yes. Yeah. They kind of touch on that a little bit. Like, it's not clear. They don't know where it came from, how it came to be. They can't destroy it, apparently, which I find odd. But there's a couple of throwaway lines in there where they take care of those kind of plot holes.
I hope season two talks about that.
Yeah.
If there is a season two. Anyway, okay. So
hopefully there's a season two.
We've got that, right? We've got I believe it's a closed loop. And unless Mannix fails to do what he is predestined to do or what he's decided to do, I still think, like, I don't know how he would have known that he had, like, there must be a repetition in things where it didn't work out and he, you know, somehow came back to 2053 and went back again. Because I don't think you can get all the details done correctly that...
In one go?
I don't. Like, how do you know to put a second trigger in?
Yeah, because he lived it.
Yeah. I'm talking the first time. So
this is where it gets super trippy because there is no first time.
It's all happening at the same time?
I don't know. This is where my brain falls apart because he, and this is jumping into 7 and 8. I don't know if you want to go there.
Nope.
Okay. That we got to leave that for the next episode then.
Let's go on to the next thing in 5 that you found interesting.
So in 5, I wrote down that Hillinghead obviously frames Ash for the murder because Polly ends up working for Mannix, right? We've seen in 1941 that Polly's there working for Mannix. At this point, that's about all we know, which I was wrong about because Hillinghead confesses to the murder himself. So he doesn't frame Ash. I wrote like the point in which Hassan is, this is, I think it's early in the episode, Hassan's in her car.
Yeah.
And she gets a phone call and I think it's her coworker. And she says that the fingerprints that were in 1890 perfectly match Elias's. And she like does this little freak out in the car. She's like shaking and like screaming. Yeah. And I just thought that was great because it's such an appropriate response to that information.
Yeah.
It's like her brain just can't figure this out. It doesn't make any sense on any level that makes sense. And so she just kind of has this little mental breakdown in the car, which I thought was great. It was a really cool reveal that Barber is Danny Barber, who is the father of Elias. That was a cool little twist.
Didn't see that coming.
No, didn't see it coming either. But it was funny because we were talking earlier about how like anybody, because when the reveal comes that Maplewood's neighbor is part of Chapel Perilous, right? It's like, well, nobody is safe here. Like, it could be, you can't trust anybody, right? But then you get this reveal about Barb and you're like, holy cow, still didn't even see it coming.
Yeah, like it's... Although I guess hindsight, yeah, right? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The writing is really tight. the characters are really tight. Like, there's not a lot of, and this is why I love these 8-episode series.
Yeah.
Like, there's like no fluff. There's no extra little bonus character that means nothing and ends up.
I'm listening to an audiobook right now recommended by a good friend of mine. It's one of his favorite series of all time. I'm listening to book one. It's an audiobook. It's 20 hours long. I am 7 hours in. Yeah, it could have been like.
It could have been 7 hours total.
Well, I don't even know what happens from here, but a day in the life of Ivan Desnetsovich comes to mind. It's like, oh, anyway. Yeah.
It forces the creators in the story to be really tight, which is what I like.
Yeah.
I thought the prosthetics on everybody were great. Like the props department deserves some praise. Like Mannix in 1941 as an old man looks great. The prosthetics on Hassan in 2053 are great.
Yeah.
Like the makeup department has really crushed it.
Yeah. I agree. I think they've done it with, there's not that many effects, but they've been done well and on budget, I guess is the way I would say it. And the throat is no big fancy thing either. It's a bunch of infrared lights. It sort of really reminded me of a Doctor Who kind of prop. And then they right? Like it's basically, you know, infrared lights and then they do the rest in a video effect, which, you know, is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, and the effect when a person walks up, like when Maplewood walked up to the throat and has the temporal, what do they call it?
Displacement.
I thought that was super cool, the way it, like, you see the same thing happening at different times, right?
Yeah.
Before and after, kind of. That was kind of cool.
As she's splitting apart.
Yes, which...
Well, conservation of energy and matter. How do you get...
Yeah.
And they get rid of that because they give us the first thing with the Deutsche Partikel when they say that there it's, you know, normally when there's multiple timelines created, they collapse instantaneously. So there is no violation of the conservation of energy and matter. But here we have an example where you send somebody through this device and you violate that law.
Well, Defoe's the only one who got split.
Really?
So far as we know.
Okay. Doesn't it look like Mannix gets split? Doesn't it look like Maplewood gets split?
Yeah. I mean, potentially.
You might want to watch them going through again. Because when I talk about 7 and 8, your ruptured brain cells are going to occur.
I mean, all we see is Mannix goes through and shows up in 18...
And the mark gets burned onto them as they arrive in the time zone,
which is weird. Like,
see, this like goes episode one. I said that there must be some other super entity involved that's marking them somehow, or some alien. Yeah,
because why would the throat do it? Why would traveling through time mark you with that mark? Marky Mark Wahlberg. Why? Like, I get that. Like, it served a purpose in the show, in the story. But it doesn't get explained at all why it happens. And maybe it doesn't need to, but maybe, I guess I'm questioning if there was a better way to do that.
Maybe it's like, I'm hoping it's something that gets explained down the road. Like they're being marked so that they can be tracked by whatever the throat is.
Yeah.
Or
because that's kind of how it's used in the narrative, right? Like it's proof that, it's proof that you've traveled through the throat.
Yeah.
But why does it happen? Yeah. Just, I don't know.
We'll have to see if there's a season two.
Freaking Netflix.
Well, I still think we should start our own streaming service that only streams canceled Netfills. Yeah. I mean, I'll do a GoFundMe for it. I mean, continue.
The other thing I thought was cool was in whichever episode that was where Hillinghead goes to the seance.
Yeah.
And there he asks the body who killed it.
Yeah.
And it starts spelling out M-A.
Yeah.
And you assume it's Mannix.
Yeah.
But it's actually Maplewood.
Yeah.
Because Maplewood's the one who shoots him.
Yeah.
That was a great, great misdirection.
And I didn't know that and realize that to just now.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You assume it's Mannix who killed him, obviously. It wouldn't
Maplewood.
Be.
Maplewood.
Maplewood. It's M.A. Yeah.
Anyway, next.
That's about all I had for those two episodes. I thought, like, I don't know, they really drew me in. It really ramps up here. You get a lot of... One thing that I really like about the show is how the story progresses through each timeline at the same... Like, they're all kind of lined up.
Yeah.
Right? The story that's happening in 1890 and the story that's happening in 1941 and 2023 and 2053 all kind of move at the same pace. And, like, that's what makes cutting back and forth so great, because... It's like the story has the same story beats in all the timelines, and they're cutting between all of them so that you get climax through all of them.
So like the scene has the same beats as the scene from each other year, which must have been a nightmare to write.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine.
Unless you write it like you write all of, I mean, they got it from a book. So whoever wrote that,
I think it's a graphic novel.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm scared to go look.
If you were to write the 1890 stuff from start to finish and then write the 1941 stuff to start to finish and then just chopped it up so that all those story beats.
It wouldn't have worked.
No?
You'd have to go back and rewrite it.
Maybe they did.
I mean, it'd be a great question to ask the writer.
Yeah, once we have them on here.
Yeah. I really like the CTU agent, the female one.
Yeah.
I thought she was great. I thought the bomb itself... I mean, having just watched Oppenheimer, you know, it's a believable size that
they
could have got things. The other thing that they haven't explained is how and where they move these bodies around to.
Yeah, they just kind of disappear.
And how do they get three of them?
So the three that we see in 2023, would be the 1890, the 1941, and the 2023 one. I was a little bit worried that the CTO agent was going to be also on the payroll.
Same here. But then, and I was really happy that she shot and killed him.
Yes.
Like, I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
Like, it, yeah, I thought that was really good.
Also, their reaction was when Hassan brings it to them and they're like, her line is great. They kind of shrug it off. Like, this is insane what you're telling us here. And the one agent is like, what do you expect us to do? And she's like, shit your pants. That's what I expect you to do. This is, yes, it's insane, but here's the evidence. This is legit. And there's going to be a bomb go off today. I expect you to shit your pants.
And that is something that they're trained for. The immediate threat of a nuclear bomb, counterterrorism, right? Like, you still have to watch the series MI6.
Yes.
Is it on your list?
Yes.
It's a British series. Okay. If you err right again, so help me God, I'm coming over there.
It's written, MI6.
Seriously, it's another British series. There's a couple of episodes in particular that you and I will talk about for hours on it. I think that's excellent. The other thing that I liked, and I'm liking about shows that aren't done by big directors more so in many ways, is it's shot very cleanly. You can see the actors' faces. You can see the backgrounds. There's detail. I don't know if you're watching the Percy Jackson series.
No.
You know nothing about... Oh, Percy Jackson's a great kid series, but I also enjoy it as well because of the mythology and everything. But it's shot so nice and clean. It's quite good. The other thing about the CTU agent being really good, I thought that Polly was really good because she, I believe it's the same actress. Actually, can we look that up? Can we?
Old Polly and young Polly?
Well, the 1940, the 1890. No, the 18.
The 1890 Polly is the same actress as the 1941 Polly?
Yeah.
I don't believe so.
Okay, hang on. Let's go. Let's find out here. That's Whiteman. That's Hassan. That's Maplewood. That's Stephen Graham. Apparently he passed away, so the series is dedicated to him. Defoe. Henry Ash. Okay, there's more.
What does that mean?
IMDb. Oh, hey, did I tell you how to go to the doctor?
Oh boy, here we go. How do you go to the doctor?
Because I accidentally drank some food coloring. The doctor said I was okay, but I think I died a little inside.
Yeah.
Where's Courtney? Tell her that. Hang on a second. If you're listening, you know, talk amongst yourselves. Okay.
Well, I heard recently that Grumpy the dwarf was pickpocketed. I didn't know somebody could stoop so low. There's one for you.
Not good.
It's great.
Okay. What are you talking about? It's great. Okay.
There's also really good characterization and character development in Maplewood.
Okay. So she plays in... Yeah. Polly's the same actress.
Get out of town. No way.
Oh, wait a second. No, it's two different actresses.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I'm an idiot. I am an idiot. Now that I've got this list up, I'm looking through everything. I'm getting rid of that now. Okay. So, yeah.
So you were saying like 5 and 6, you feel could be like the end of the series.
You could end the series at the end of 6.
So, yes, you totally could. You totally could. But I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad they didn't because of things that we see in 7 and 8.
Yeah. But you could have ended season 1 there and then ended on a, like, we're now jumping into 7 and 8, and I don't want to do that. Cause if we jump into 7 and 8, the podcast, and it's, this will be a shorter episode because we're only at 37 minutes, but 7 and 8 will probably go on for an hour and a half by themselves. So I'm not Dan Carlin in Hardcore History who can do 5-hour podcasts. You know, so they could have ended the episode. They could have ended, you know, the season 1 there. I don't even know if there's a plan for season 2.
I know, which scares me.
Can you Google it quickly?
Yep.
Cause it's it would be a great, what's the word I'm looking for? It'd be great to see more of it. You know, I'd like to get some answers as to why Mannix knew that he needed to have a second trigger. Did he have to go through the loops many times to get his utopia? Once we break out of the loop, well, what happens to all our characters? You know, do they live? Do they die? Do they disappear? Is history start, you know, how is history changed by the loop being gone? It goes on forever.
I talk about 7 and 8 so bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, all sorts of things. Did you find out if there's a,
The creator and writer of the series, Paul Tomalin, shared some insights about the show's future. In a recent interview, he explained how the show was written to be a limited series. He shared how they pitched Bodies to Netflix as a one-and-done series. He wanted to solve it and not keep the fans waiting. The writer also expressed how he hates it when a great show ends without solving things and keeps fans waiting for the next installment. So that sounds like season 2 should be coming.
No, it's one-and-done is what he says.
Yeah.
What you just said makes me think there's one season and that's it.
Yeah.
He hasn't lived up to those promises. Believe me. I've watched 7 and 8. He hasn't lived up to them. I'm going after him on the Twitter face timeline, you know.
X.
You know, the Insta book or whatever. Do you have any closing thoughts on 5 and 6?
You know, that's about it.
I'm gonna throw again.
The acting's great. The actor who plays Elias does a great job in these scenes. Like, he's clearly a tortured soul, and he plays it really well.
I'm impressed how they do this on such a low budget. Like, it's not a huge budget. There's not a lot of extras. It's shot in very plain locations. I mean, the big explosion is basically seen from a distance, which of course they have to do because these people have to live because of the story, right? So that makes sense to me. The buried nuclear bomb, you know, all of those, the recording, all of those sorts of things. They've done a really good job of doing it on a limited budget without having to get, you know, all sorts of, you know, I wonder what the budget per episode is. That would be interesting.
I'm trying to look it up right now. I can't really find it. It's not popping out.
And I'm wondering what the viewing audience was like. You know, it'd be interesting to find out what that would be. We've been sponsored by Figuratively Speaking Minis. Doug would like to be sponsored by Rogue Wave Coffee. He's now out. We'll be closing off our discussion on season one, or the only season of Bodies, probably next week. And then Doug and Jeff are going to have an argument about Rebel Moon that may go on for an extended period of time. I hope you've enjoyed it. And until next time, peace out, to copy Matt Coville.